Well, it's good to have you today in this class at 8:30 in the morning, because as I say, I know it is a hard time to get up and to be out, and it's not exactly the time, I don't know if any time is the time when we want to talk about death and talk about funerals and talk about helping people through a mourning period and think in terms of being able to even get ourselves ready. But that's what we want to do this morning. Now, our first session, we talked about mourning or weeping and how we need to be involved in helping people and some of the things we can do to help people in their mourning period. And then yesterday, we talked a little bit more about the funeral, the actual service a little bit, and some of the things in arranging and things of this nature. And today we want to talk about, well, we want to talk about putting your house in order, but from two aspects. First of all, after death has happened, because that's really what we've started out talking about, is helping a family put their house in order after a death has occurred. But then at the end, we want to talk about putting our own house in order so that things will not be quite as difficult for our family and loved ones when we leave this life. Which, do you hear that euphemism for death? See, we still don't like to say death. Even, you know, it's just something we kind of shy away from. Yesterday, when we talked about the funeral, we talked about family involvement, and we talked about involvement in preparing for the funeral, perhaps even helping to prepare the deceased for the funeral by, you know, some members of the family, and then perhaps being involved in helping the deceased get into the grave and be covered up as a burial situation. A gentleman came up to me yesterday from this class, and very fine-looking man. He said, my wife died about a year ago, and I helped to put the dirt, yes, on her grave. And I thought that was a very touching thing. And it may sound, to some of us who are not accustomed to that, a little bit gruesome. But see, it's not. And that's what we have to be careful about doing, about prejudging something, because we're talking about a loved one. We're talking about someone that's very dear to us. And if you have a baby that you want to dress, if you want to be involved, you know, let's do that, because it helps us to work through our grief. And let's don't try to discourage others. We had, in fact, my secretary presently had a child, a beautiful little baby girl, and she has had a birth defect from genes from both her mother and her father, that just all of a sudden they noticed that the child seemed not only to not be developing but to be regressing. When the child died, they knew what it was, and there's nothing they can do about it. At the funeral, the father wanted to sit there. After everyone else had left, he just wanted to sit and be with his little baby for a while. But everybody was in a rush. Well, it was a little cold, and the wind was kind of whipping around, and the grave people were standing over there with their shovels. They wanted to, you know, get it filled back up and go on home and do their thing. And everybody was saying, well, come on, John, you know, you can come back, go away for about 15 minutes, or a little more than that, I guess, hour, you know, go off for an hour and a half and have a cup of coffee, and then come back, and it'll all be ready. You'll be able to see that pretty little grave, you know, all covered up with dirt. But that's not what he wanted. He wanted to sit there with his little Jennifer, quite possibly the only child they'd ever have at that time, they thought, because they knew they both carried this gene. Two beautiful people trying to work their way through death and through the grief of death. And we need to let them. We need to let them do it their way. And we should not be prejudiced by our quirks of custom and tradition. Well, today, let's talk about getting the house in order. Let's assume now, as we have been, has been our preface in this class, that there's been a death. It's the first time that these people have had to personally, immediately struggle with death. They've gone home before, maybe to death. We've got a lot of people in Richmond that live elsewhere. In fact, I'm always giving Alabama people a hard time, because about a third of our congregation has come from Alabama. And of course, they give me a hard time because I'm from Texas. But we have fun. But we're talking about now a family that has got death in their family for the first time, that they have to handle themselves. They're not going to go home and everything's going to already be arranged. Basically, we're also talking about the death of a parent or a spouse because of some of the things that are involved. And what may be important in one case may not be important in another case. For instance, a lot of this involves around getting the estate and the financial situation straight. Well, some families are very open about their finances. Everybody knows. I mean, you know, father knows, mother knows, the kids know, grandmother knows. Everybody knows everything about their finances. It's no secret. They may not know every detail, but they at least know where to go to get things straightened out. Other people are very private, and no one really knows their business, and that's where the problems come in. Now, I'm not saying that it's wrong for them to be private, but I'm saying that if you are private, some other things need to be done, and we're going to talk about that in a minute when we talk about preparing your house before death. But if you're into a situation where their finances have been very private and the survivors know nothing, then they're probably going to need some help. Case in point, a businessman, very successful businessman, but his business involved, he'd go around over various areas of the Southwest, and he'd make business deals, and somehow he had it in his mind that he did not want to pay any more taxes than he had. I'm not talking about a Christian brother, but he didn't want to pay any more taxes, and it wasn't that he was just willing to find every legal way. He was willing to try some illegal ways if necessary to keep from having to pay the necessary taxes. So if he went off somewhere and he made a business deal and he had several thousand dollars in his pocket, either in cash or checks, not only did he not want to carry that much money, but he didn't want anybody to know about it. And so if he came to Abilene and he made a business deal and picked up $50,000 or $100,000, he'd just go down to the bank and deposit it, open an account, a savings account. Well, when he died, that man had money scattered all over two or three states. And nobody knew where it was. And they weren't even sure, you know, what to do to find out about it. Okay, that was a situation, you know, which created a problem. There have been other situations where perhaps the husband has been so private about the financial situations, and I'm not saying that he's been stingy, but maybe he's given his wife plenty of money and she's never wanted for anything. But when it came down to his death, she didn't know where their money was, how much they had, where it came from, how it was invested, or anything. So the things that are important in some cases may not be important in others, because there may be more openness about some of these different areas. Your purpose is to try to help people to make careful and thoughtful decisions. And sometimes that means you have to say, well, John, wait a minute, or let me ask you a question, or why do you want to do that? Some people, in the anguish and the being wrought and in their grief, do things like suddenly sell their house and move to Florida. Never been to Florida before in their life. They have no relatives in Florida. All their family and friends are thousands of miles back home. Why do they want to move to Florida? Well, they just kind of wanted to get away. Maybe they heard about a trip somebody took down there one time, and they, you know, really raved about how wonderful Florida was. And all of a sudden they find themselves in Florida, paying $300 a week for an efficiency apartment, or maybe living up in a condominium where everybody's, you know, running around hustle bustle and they can't make friends. They can't get to a church, they can't, what happens to them? Well, they've made a wrong decision. They realize it. Some people then will say, I made a wrong decision, I'm going back home. Well, even if they do that, it still costs them a lot of money, a lot of heartache. Some won't admit they've made a mistake. And they might stay there. Or they might go somewhere else. They don't want to go back home because they feel like that would be admitting to a mistake, and they don't want to do that. But what you want to do is to try to help them to make careful and thoughtful decisions. Generally, it is a mistake to make any hasty change that is going to change the whole course of your future during a period of grief. I mean, if you make a change during your grief that's, I can't think of another word besides hasty. It just, it's kind of erratic, it's offbeat, it's away from the way you would normally do things. The majority of the time, that will be an error for you or for them. And your point is not that you don't want your friend to move to Florida or sell their house and buy a larger one or a smaller one. It's just you want them to take the time so that when they make the decision, it's one that they've made after careful thought. That's what you want to do. Now, we have the situation where someone has died. Your friends are in grief. They don't really know what to do, how to get themselves sorted out and arranged and their finances and their household in order. You can help, maybe by making telephone calls, perhaps by writing letters, and gathering information. Well, let's suppose you have minor children. Okay, well, you don't know, but somewhere along the line, these people that have lost their loved one are aware of the fact that if you have minor children, they're eligible for some Social Security payments. That Social Security is going to send them some money until that child reaches a certain age. And unfortunately, and I'm not trying to put down the government, but sometimes it gets a little confusing. You don't always get the right information the first time or all the information the first time. And it's possible to go down to the Social Security office and they say, well, do you have your children's birth certificates? Oh, well, no, I don't. Well, we can't do anything without those. So you turn around, you go back and get the birth certificates. Then you come back with them and say, well, do you have your marriage license? Oh, well, no, I don't. So you turn around, you go back, and you come back and say, do you have your death certificate? About that time, the person's ready to pull their hair. I mean, they're already in the agony of grief, and they're trying to get things set up. Okay, that's where you come in. That's where you can be of some help. Either by telephoning, by making a trip yourself, by talking with someone who's been through the experience and say, hey, what did you need? And I said, well, all I needed was three or four things, and they were one, two, three, four. Okay, that saved that person. And we're not talking about four trips of gasoline, although that's a concern to everyone today. But the thing is to have to go through that agonizing trip three or four different times, and every time you wait an hour and then have the door shut in your face. And it's a pain to go through that. It's a grief to you. And what you're trying to do is to help those people where they do not have to endure any more hurt than necessary. Now, as I said earlier, we don't want to make it easy on people because they have to work through their grief, but at the same time, we don't want to make it hard. We're trying to allow them to work through their grief to the best extent that they can without any undue cumbersome burdens. You may have to suggest a lawyer or two. Many people do not have a lawyer, don't even know a lawyer, and are afraid of lawyers. Oh, I can't talk to a lawyer. He might charge me $1,000 to walk in his office. Well, maybe you can find out some things about what lawyers charge. Maybe you can help them with a little information. A simple will, like most of us poor folks need, will run you from $25 to $50, depending on the lawyer you pick. And, you know, $50 or $100 is not too bad, and we're going to talk about wills a little bit more, but you may have to make some suggestions about a couple of lawyers or a couple of financial advisors or someone like this who can help these people in some of the decisions. But you cannot make those suggestions yourself if you don't know any lawyers or if you do not know any competent financial advisors. Now, you may have caught, I said, a couple of lawyers. I never recommend preachers. I'll never tell anybody, never tell a church, hey, here's John Brown over here who's a fantastic preacher and you better hire him quick. Because just as sure as I did something like that, John and Elder Bill, they'd clash. And boy, they'd hate me for the rest of my born days. So suggest a couple of lawyers and let them make the choice between the two. But at least if you know a couple of decent financial advisors or brokers or whoever it might be, you know, that can give them a direction to go. And that's what we're trying to do, is just give them a little help, give them a little direction. Perhaps some of you heard the story. I think it was intended to be a joke, but it's a little sad to be a joke. But it's a woman who wrote an insurance company. And she said, "Dear sir, for the last 2 years, I have had a most difficult time making this insurance payment. And I'm no longer going to be able to do that, and so please just drop my policy." And the man wrote back, the company wrote back and said, "Well, madam, you should not drop this policy. It's very valuable. It pays $25,000 on the death of your husband." And she wrote back and said, "Well, my husband died 2 years ago." Like I said, that was supposed to have been a joke, but it's too sad to be a joke. Because that woman didn't have someone to say, "Hey, look, would you like me to help you go through your personal papers and locate some insurance policies? Well, we need a little help sometime, and we generally appreciate someone who will be with us, who will hold our hand, maybe just sit across a table and sip coffee while we do it ourselves." Now, some people won't want you going through their private things, but maybe they'd like to have you there. And aside here, I'll throw this in, doesn't cost anything. Several years ago, we got very close to a family that lived behind us, and they had several small children, and the lady had terminal cancer and died. But in her long and lingering illness, one of the few people that she really wanted and desired to visit her was my wife, Ann. And she said that one of the reasons she wanted her there, besides for the fact that the love that they had for each other and the love and concern we were extending to the family, was that she didn't have to talk. That Ann would come and sit in the room, read a magazine, maybe once in a while make some comment to Ruth that she didn't have to respond to, but she just sat there for 30 minutes or an hour. Ruth was weak and she was tired, and it was a great effort for her to talk. But she did want human companionship. Now, same thing applies when we're in grief. If you're there, they may want to talk, and if they do, wonderful. But don't feel like that you have to keep up a running chatter. Just sit there and sip your coffee and let them go through their books. Let them cry. If they run across a canceled check about that trip they took to Disney World, and all of a sudden the flood of memories comes back and they just can't hold it and they break down, let them cry. When they quit, they'll take their breath and they'll tell you, "I saw this check and I just remember that birthday present that I bought for him his last birthday." Fine. They need that. All right, now, as you're trying to help people get their estates in order, you need to learn what is needed. They need to learn what is needed. In order for you to help them, you kind of need to know. Generally speaking, when you get involved with contacting any type of insurance companies or Social Security or whatever it might be, they're going to need a death certificate, probably several. Because almost everybody you write to or you talk to, well, we have to have a copy of the death certificate. So depending on how many insurance policies you got and various things, you may need, you know, two or three or perhaps a dozen. Don't run out and get a dozen copies until you know you need them. But, you know, you might need that many copies of the death certificate before they can pay the benefits or whatever it might be. Yes? Thank you. I did forget to say that. Don't just run down to the post office and slap it on the Xerox machine. It's got to be one that's certified. probably run you, depending on where you are, from $1 to $2 a piece. So they're not real expensive. And that saves you that extra trip, or that extra letter, or that extra phone call. You know, why didn't you send them a policy? And some insurance companies are they're just like people. Some sort of go out of their way to help you. Others, you don't hear from them for a week or 2 weeks, and finally you call or write, and they say, well, we don't have a death certificate, and we can't issue the money until we have a death. Well, why didn't you tell me? Well, it's not our place. So they're just like people, and so we have to help these friends know what to do. The odds are you will need such things as a marriage license, birth certificates, adoption papers. Oh, they want to know what connection you have. They don't make a payment out just to anybody, or they don't put just anybody on the Social Security or the death benefits that the company may pay. Sometimes they want a little proof. Even if they know you, even if they know who you are, for their own legal records, to satisfy the auditor who comes around, they're going to need something. So these are some of the things. As you're trying to help this person get their house in order after death, they may need to be taught how to handle money. Maybe they've never handled the money before. Maybe they've had sort of an allowance. And I'm not talking about women necessarily, because a lot of the women handle the money, and the father or the husband, he just, takes the 10 or 20 or 40 or whatever it is that he buys his lunch with and pays his parking meter tickets. And he just knows he's got $40 and he's got to last till Friday, and he just goes. And all of a sudden, he's got the whole avalanche of the bills and everything. And man, do the kids' dental bills cost this much? Do we have to spend this much money on shoes? What's going on? Sometimes any and everybody can be in need of a little basic information about how to how to handle their finances and get their budget set up. Well, if you don't know how, there are little places around where you can pick up some books and information, and I'll show you a couple in a minute. Generally speaking, in the death of someone, there's involves a loss of income. It's a loss either in the sense that the breadwinner has died, or if the wife's a breadwinner as well, her income is now missing. Or it may be that simply a loss of income in the sense that now someone has to be hired to do the same things. I mean, if the husband has cut the grass every week and all of a sudden you're having to pay $25 or $30 to get some guy to come over and mow and trim your grass or your front yard, that's $30. That is a loss of income. If you have to suddenly hire a babysitter or someone for child care that wasn't necessary before, and now you suddenly find yourself paying out $50 or $100 a week, that's a loss of income. You still got the money coming in, but you picked up an additional expense. So there's an adjustment there, usually, no matter what is involved. The budget may need to be totally reworked, even if there is no change in the income because of additional expenses that may be picked up. Now, again, let me emphasize that in helping someone get their financial situation straightened out, that we're not there to pry. We're not there to find out everything about their business and then go out and tell people that we know or tell them what it is. We're just there to help, to assist. Most of us have too big a mouth. Most of us tell too many private, personal things anyway. And this is one of the reasons why many preachers have a problem in counseling. Because even if the preacher won't talk, nobody believes it because everybody else talks. It just seems to be a way of life with us. And, we just don't know how to keep a secret. Or even if it's not a secret, if they haven't sworn us to secrecy, it's just something they assume that we wouldn't go out and tell something. So the next thing they know, they go to church, and somebody they hear talking about how they looked at that canceled check and started crying. Well, now, if that information is going to be told, it's their place to tell. It's not mine. It's not yours. So you just keep that type of information to yourself. And if you will, it'll create a stronger bond between you and that person. Make them love you more. They'll be closer to you. Yes. All right. Don't pry, but do offer specific assistance. And I say that in contrast to saying, if there's anything I can do to help you, let me know. Goodbye. Well, you know, once you offer specific assistance and you get involved in helping them, then it's a little different if you come and you put your arm around them and say, Betty, is there anything else I can do? Well, you've already been working with them for several hours or several days. And at that point in time, they're not going to be hesitant to say, oh, yes, there he is. Please, would you mind? And they tell you what it is. Okay, but at that point, see, you can make a general offer and get a good response from it. Now, you may need to look, as we've already mentioned, through the canceled checks to find such things as insurance payments. Sometimes some people have insurance policies that they're paying on, and the family doesn't even know about it. And they're not going to know about it until maybe they'll get a notice from the insurance company. Okay, the odds are they probably will, because I don't think the insurance companies are out to intentionally defraud you. But how long will it be before that happens? A month? 6 weeks? 2 months? And then once you find out there's a policy, then you got to write and find out what's going on. All right, and maybe by that time, 3 or 4 months have passed. And during that period of time, the family just holding on by their fingernails for money and finances. And yet all this time, there had been thousands of dollars down at the insurance company that they could have used. And there wasn't any need for that desperate struggle for 2, 3, 4 months. So maybe you need to go through the checks. Maybe you'll find out about loans. You might look in there and you find a check made out every month to the First National Bank. What's this for? Maybe it's a car payment. Maybe it's a house payment. Maybe it's a payment on a piece of property that somebody bought somewhere. All right, so you know, you can find this information out in this way. If you find old insurance policies, right. The odds are you're going to get, you know, a letter back that says this policy was canceled or the cash value was redeemed or whatever. It lapsed for non-payment. But you're also going to find some companies that are going to say this is a paid-up life insurance policy in the face value of, or it has a cash value of, and that's not going to happen a lot. But when it does, it's something we don't want to miss. We don't want to throw away. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about before death, and then we're going to open it up to some questions and responses and personal experiences that some of you may have shared, may have and want to share with us. Now, before death, and getting ready, getting our house in order, we seem to be superstitious. It's like if we get ready for death, that means we want to die, or we're planning on dying soon, or somebody thinks we're going to commit suicide, or, you know, we just don't want to talk about it. We don't want to be ready. Well, of course, that's ridiculous. It's the way we are, maybe, but it's ridiculous. And Art Linkletter said people are funny. He could have said people are weird, which is maybe what he meant. But for some reason, we don't want to be ready. And it doesn't hurt us to get ready. And it hurts the family when we're not ready. It's always easier to make plans ahead of time. Now let me hit you with a couple of three shocking thoughts. Number one, 1 out of 3 males die within 24 hours of the onset of a serious illness or an accident. Man, you just don't have time to get ready. 1 out of 3 men die within 24 hours of a serious illness or an accident. And you just don't have time to get ready under those circumstances. Now see, we all think, well, if I ever get sick. I went in for some minor surgery a few years ago. It was really very trivial, nothing to it, but I knew I was going under the anesthetic. And anytime, you know, that's the time when I thought, well, I've got to have a will. Scared Ann to death because she thought, there's something you're not telling me. You know, but you know, when you're fixing to go to the hospital and you whip out your pen and you write a will out, you know, everybody says, whoops. Just like on one occasion, I had a life insurance salesman coming over and talking to me, and my son upstairs heard us talking about it. I heard them talking about death benefits. And he went to Ann and he says, is Daddy going to die? You know, it just kind of upsetting. All right, but you don't have time to prepare. Don't count on it. Don't count on time. You may also already be aware of the fact that the greatest conflict in families are the finances. After a death, it gets that squabble up about how the money's going to be divided and what's going to be done, this and that. Well, you can avoid this with a will. And you should discuss that will with your family ahead of time. It should not be a secret. Now, I don't mean you have to tell them every detail, but you need to kind of let them know in general what the will says. They need to know, so it won't be a total shock that you're leaving all your money to take care of your four cats. You know, they need to know ahead of time. So you can, create a little smoother atmosphere. After all, the whole purpose in getting yourself ready is to help those you love the most.
Please run this cassette fast forward to the end and turn it over for side two.
I don't think any of us want to hurt those we love the most. Well, then why don't we do what's necessary to help those we love the most? It just makes common sense. No will, then there are problems. Now, they're not problems in one sense. The state's going to be your will. The state will make your will. If you don't write a will, don't worry about it. The state will write it for you. If you trust a judge who's never met you, doesn't know your children, has no concept of your religious faith and commitment, doesn't know what you like, deciding where your money's going to go. Now, if you don't mind that, then don't worry about it. Because the state will take care of it. I don't care what state it is, Virginia, Texas, or whatever, they're going to take care of it. But if you have minor children, or in most states, I hope the laws change, in most states, wives have a difficulty. In Virginia, now they're working to change this, but in Virginia, if the man dies, the wife has to pay an inheritance on at least half of everything they own. Now, if the wife dies, it's no problem. The man just takes it all because they assume it was his anyway. Now, they're working to change that law because it's ridiculous for the wife to have to pay that inheritance on something that was basically already hers. But even so, there are other little problems involved. Minor children. Let me tell you a short story about a very well-to-do family. Man had a good job, made good money, above upper middle class, or at least in the top bracket of that. We wouldn't call them wealthy, but right on up there. But like a whole lot of us, they live from paycheck to paycheck. You know, they just spend it as fast as it came in. Well, he died just like that of a massive heart attack. Well, it just so happened he had been doing a lot of work, a lot of overtime. He had also drawn on some compensatory time because they were going to take a little vacation. He had a check coming for $3,000. The company he worked for found out about it. He stopped payment on the check, reissued the check because it's made out to him. They reissued the check made out to the estate of John Doe. The wife couldn't do anything with it. She couldn't cash it. She had to go to court and pay over $200, which may not seem like a lot of money, but it's kind of ridiculous to have to spend that to be declared guardian of your own children. She had to go to court and be declared guardian of her own children. Then the judge told her how to spend that money. You cannot spend that $3,000 on house payment. You can't spend it on utilities. And you can't spend it on any charge accounts, Visa, Bank of America card, pennies, or whatever. Well, he had a good-sized insurance policy, and it eventually worked out. But for a couple of 3 months there, things were tight. She had no money. I mean, what do you do when you can't make your mortgage payment for 2 or 3 months? Even if your bank is nice to you, and they're not as nice now as they used to be because of the tight money situation, it's still an embarrassment to have to go down to the bank hat in hand and say, Mr. Banker, I'm not going to be able to make my house payment. And then go to the utility companies and say, is it still Texas Power and Light around here? What is it? Western Electric? I don't know. It's VEBCO up in Virginia. But I'm not going to be able to make my utility payment. Well, that's a needless thing to go through simply because somebody didn't take the time to have a will made out. You can avoid many of these things with wills. And besides that, it allows you to know that things are going to be done as you want them to be done. Here's another thing that's shocking. 80% of the widows exhaust their funds in 3 to 5 years. And some of these situations, we're talking about large insurance settlements. Now, they may not have very much money. They may have just kind of lived like everybody else, but suddenly the man dies, and maybe the widow receives $100,000 or $250,000 in insurance. In 3 to 5 years, 80% of them are down to zero. There are some reasons for this. Many did not know how to handle money, number one. They just didn't know what to do with it, how to make it work for them. Number two, they received some very poor financial advice, unfortunately, from their friends and family. They listened to what their brother has to say, or, it's always interesting to me that somebody who's an automobile mechanic can tell you how to make financial investments, and somebody who's a financial investor can tell you how to fix your car and make it run 100 miles on a gallon of gas. If they'd stick to what they know, everybody'd be great. And you get some very poor financial advice many times from those that are closest to you. Now, because of one and two, these ladies find it, or it's very easy for them to be bilked of their money. And I don't necessarily mean just the flim-flam that you read about in the paper. I'm talking about the son that says, "Oh, Mama, I've always wanted to open up a taco stand in Nome, Alaska. This is my chance, and you've got $100,000. If you'll just loan me $50,000, I promise you I'll repay it in 6 months." Well, somehow, didn't go as well as he thought, and he just doesn't feel the obligation to pay it back like he would if it was the First National Bank. Besides that, the First National Bank could go get it. Properly handled, $100,000 can provide an income of $15,000 to $20,000 for 20 years. Now, I know something, of course, at the end of that 20 years, there may not be any money left because you have to draw on that. You don't get it just from interest. Okay, properly handled, $100,000 can provide an income of $15,000 to $20,000 a year for 20 years. Now, if you take $100,000 and put it in a bank, in a checking account, and you just start writing checks, $10,000 a year, you're gone in 10 years. But if you're getting 10% interest and using all the interest and a little bit of the principal, all right, let's say someone is 65 or 70 years old, they've got a $100,000 insurance payment. Now, how long are they going to live? Well, a woman's going to live longer than a man, but the odds are, he or she's not going to need to count on that money for the next 50 years. Another problem that I consider to be a problem is a lot of people want to save that money for their children. Now, if your children are those kind of people, that's sad. You know, if you've got $100,000 and you feel like you have to keep all of that or half of that to give to them when you die, something's wrong. That money's for you to live on, for your needs, and for you to provide for yourself. Now, I'm not saying if they have a need, a sickness, or a big hospital bill that you might not want to help a little bit. But, you know, let's realize and recognize what's going on. Your children ought to be caring for you in these times and not you, you know, still having to worry about them and loan them or give them all the money. Now, the money won't provide that kind of income if it's spent or if it's loaned to relatives. Another problem some people have is spending this money. They get $100,000, more money they ever had in their life, they got to go spend it. They want to buy a new car, a new house, a new wardrobe, take 3 trips around the world, one this way, one that way, and one backwards. You know? Okay. Next thing you know, they're down to zero, and they don't know what to do. I read in the newspaper a few years ago of a family that through some type of lottery or whatever won a flat $1 million. 3 years later, they were stone broke. And you know what they said? With a smile on their face, practically back on welfare again, we'd do it again. You know, if you had $1 million, you're set for the rest of your life, and so are your children and grandchildren, if you handle it right. And they blew it in 3 years and said they'd do it again. Well, now, some of that's through ignorance, excitement, lack of experience, whatever it is. If you've got someone that's got some money, don't let them do that without thinking about it. Going back, one of the things you're trying to do is to help them make decisions after careful thought. Just because they've got more money than they've ever had before doesn't mean they need to run out and buy a new car. Maybe they've never had a new car before in their life, and maybe they've got a new car sitting in the driveway. But I never did like it when he bought it, because I wanted yellow and he bought blue, and I'm going to have a yellow car. You can paint it for $150. That's really what you want. But, you know, just help them make careful decisions after some thought. If I could get a little help here.
You gentlemen pass out a couple of these things. You can help me here. Maybe my name is technical here. I don't know.
Let somebody else do that. Take one or two of these, every what you feel like you need, and these aren't mine in the sense of being copyrighted or anything. If you want to redo them and add something to them, use them at home in your congregation. It's entitled Getting My House in Order, and I would suggest that everybody have two or three of these at least. You need to have one that's completed and given to a relative, someone that's close to you that knows a little bit about you. You need to give one to your lawyer or your financial advisor. Maybe you need to have one at the home in your own house. Tell people where it is. Hey, listen, I've got this thing stuck in a family Bible, or it's underneath the suitcase in the back of the closet, or, you know, it's in the desk drawer. Let them know where it is. Don't just hide it in the house, because they'll never find it until a month after you're gone. That's too late for it to do any good. Leave a copy at the church, because it's got some information on here, and if you redid it, you might add some more information about funerals and how you want your funeral conducted. Leave it at the church. Maybe the church will start a file on something like this, and when someone dies, Joe Brown dies, they go whip out Joe Brown's Getting My House in Order sheet and turn it over and says, well, here's a song that he wanted at his funeral, or here's a scripture she liked to have, was her favorite passage of scripture. We're going to use that in the funeral, and your thoughts and wishes will be carried through on that. So have several copies. Give one to a close relative, one to your legal advisor, one to the church, maybe leave one around the house, and mail one to the governor if you want to. It doesn't really matter. Number one there says your name. Now, make this your full name. I don't care if you hate your middle name, you know. If your middle name's Aloysius and you don't like it, write it down anyway and spell it correctly. Don't use the nicknames. Put your full name. If it's, you know, John Doe Smith Jr., put it down. All right, put your correct address. And some of this information, as you'll see, is going to have to be updated. If you move, you need to change your address, because your family's going to be using some of this information, perhaps at the funeral home, writing your obituary and some things like this. Put down your correct birth date, your place of birth. Put down your father's full name, his birth date. That's what that BD stands for. His birth date and where he was born. Your mother's full name, including the middle maiden name. That's what that extra space is in there for. Your mother's maiden name. Put down your occupation and your employer. Put down your Social Security number. Write down the name of your retirement fund or some information that might be needed to help them locate the retirement fund. Put down when your last will was executed. When it was dated. There was a lady and a husband, man and wife, who wrote their wills. And quite properly, she wrote her will, leaving everything to her husband, and he wrote his will, leaving everything to his wife. And she died. And several years later, he died. But he had never changed his will. His will still left everything to his wife. And she had been dead several years, so the whole thing was thrown up into court, and they had to go through court and lost over half of a pretty sizable estate trying to get the thing straightened out. Perhaps you heard of the fellow that was supposed to have been on his deathbed, and as he felt death very imminent, very close to him, he reached over to the table and he grabbed a pen and a piece of paper and he laid it on his stomach and he wrote, "I'll leave everything to Mama." They spent a lot of the estate trying to find out who Mama was. Court's not satisfied with something like that necessarily. Now, I will say this, a lot depends on where you live. If you live in a small town and those folks have known you all your life, you can get away with a lot. Now, your account is supposed to be frozen. If it's a joint account and one of them dies, your account's supposed to be frozen. But you go in there and you see old banker Bill and he says, "Sure, you need some money?" "Yeah, don't worry about that, you know. I mean, after all, you've only got about $400 or $500 in your checking account, and you know, he knows you and he's known you for years, and it's not going to matter." But even in a small town, if you go waltzing in there and you want to draw out $20,000 or $30,000 out of savings, whoops, you're probably going to have a problem. Even in a small town, even if they've known you all your life. If you live in a city like Richmond or Dallas or Fort Worth or Houston, don't expect very much bending of the rules, because it's not going to happen. All right, tell where it's located. The will's no good if they can't find it. The date of my last executed will was December 1979. Where is it? I don't know. People have literally gone through bookcases, looking through every book, trying to find the will. I know they had a will somewhere. They can't find it. All right, put down the executor's name and address. And generally speaking, the executor of a will has to live in the same state. Now, one of the things that I didn't put on here is power of attorney. You may want to have give a power of attorney in the event that you are somehow incapacitated for a while and they need to use some of your finances to pay your bills or make your house payment or something like that. So you might want to include that somewhere on this form if you're going to redo it. You need to have an inventory and a letter concerning the disposal of personal goods. Now, if you have valuable art and expensive jewelry, that needs to go in the will. But most of the time, a lawyer doesn't want to mess around with three or four pages where you say, now I want the Demitasse's teaspoons to go to my nephew or my niece, and I want that little blue vase that was dropped and glued back together. The lawyer doesn't want to mess with those kind of things, and that's unnecessary, and it just makes your cost go up if you ask the lawyer to include that in the will. So all you have to do is, it sounds simple, but it's takes a little time, but it saves a lot of wear and tear. Make an inventory of what you have in the house, and if you have some wishes about where some of it's supposed to go, say, "I want my daughter to get the favorite rocker," whatever it is. Favorite rocker's not worth over $10 in a used furniture store, and maybe she can go down to a used furniture store and buy 14 just like it, but it won't be just like it, won't be it. That's that favorite rocker. If you want her to have it and she wants it, put it out in a letter. No problem. It's a lot simpler. What about the case? These are sentimental items, basically, that we're talking about of little value. But what about the case of the family where the last parent had died and the children agreed to meet over at the house and divide all the last effects up by mutual agreement? And so they meet over there and they spend most of the day or half a day, going through all of the things, and they're saying, "Well, this goes over here. I want this. I gave this to mother, or this meant a lot to me when I was a child. This was daddy's, old hunting rifle, and I'd love to have it." Okay, but they keep saying, I know daddy had a double barrel shotgun. I wonder what happened to it. You think he gave it away to somebody? Or he lost it? But mother had a diamond birthstone ring, and I can't find that. We torn his whole house up. Well, several weeks later, they found out that one of the children had come over early and made a couple of extra trips home with a loaded down car. Now, you can stop some of that from happening with a little inventory and who you want to have what. Or maybe nobody sneaks over early, but maybe two people want that rocking chair. And so you can say that rocking chair goes to this one, but I've got the old bassinet in the attic that I want the other one to have. Okay, so you can make those decisions, and that helps. That helps the family. All we're trying to do in this 3 days is to make things easier on the family. Sometimes we can do that by helping people that have had a death. Sometimes we can do it by getting ready ourselves ahead of time. Safety deposit box, number, location, contents of the box. Put what's in the box so they'll have some idea what's down there. They need to find your will. It's right there in the lockbox. Or maybe you've got other copies of the will as well. Birth certificates, adoption papers, marriage papers, etc. go in the kind of the box. All right, other valuable papers can be found. They're not maybe important enough to go in the lockbox, but you've got them in a fireproof thing, you know, underneath the bed, or they're in a cardboard box out in the garage. You know, really important. You know, we haven't thrown them away for 25 years, and the rats have been chewing on them for the last 15. But, you know, give them some idea of where to go and what to find. Armed forces. Somebody been in the military? What are the dates? These things are important. What was your serial number? Discharge certificates. There may be benefits involved. You know, put these things down. Life insurance. List the amount. List the company. List the number of the policy. List the beneficiaries. All right. Where are we going to find the policies? What's the name of your lawyer? What's the name of your insurance agent? What's the name of your investment broker? What's their address? Where's your church membership? Well, everybody knows. Well, they do now. But what happens, you know, if things change a little bit? You know, you make a move and you go somewhere else, and maybe some of these things need to be known. All right, the following information are suggested. This is you now. You're the deceased. Been nice knowing you. You're the deceased, and you've left this little sheet here for your family. And you're saying the following information are suggestions which may be modified if circumstances warrant. But my preferred funeral director is. You put him down. I have not pre-planned my funeral. Okay, sometimes people pre-plan their funerals. Pretty good idea in many respects. Organ donation arrangements have been made with the Texas Medical Society or whatever it's called here. Organ donation arrangements have not been made, but I desire my, you know, eyes or kidneys or whatever, or entire body to be donated if possible. Now, as I mentioned before yesterday, I guess I'm leaning more and more toward the idea of donating the body to medical science. And again, I know that's gruesome to a lot of people, and they don't like to talk about it, they don't like to think about it, but it's not you. How many of you have ever thrown away a pair of shoes that were worn out? Okay, that covers most of us. What are you going to do with your body when it's worn out and you've gone on somewhere else? You don't need it any longer. And it's not going to do anybody any good. All it's going to do is cost them money. Well, that's something you need to think about, talk about with your family. Don't spring a surprise. If you decide to do that, don't spring a surprise on them. You know, that's not the time. It's not the time. As I said, I'm for it, but don't try to surprise them that way. All right, I desire to be buried in such and such cemetery or such and such town where I have or have not bought a burial plot. I desire to be cremated and the ashes disposed of by being scattered over the, is there a river around here? Is there any water? What's the lake? Fort Phantom Lake. You know, I want my ashes scattered over Fort Phantom Lake from an airplane. Or I want them put in an urn and set up on a fireplace mantle. Or I want them buried somewhere. You know, whatever it is, ever how you want it taken care of, do it. You know, sprinkle over the 18th hole at the golf course. It doesn't matter. If that's what you want to do, they'll probably find some way to accommodate your wishes. I desire in lieu of flowers that donations be made to the Heart Fund, the Cancer Society, the Children's Home, Building Fund at Church, the Mission Fund, or whatever. I desire the total cost of my funeral to be within the following cost limitations. Now, if you keep this thing up to date, you can put a dollar amount. But if you're going to fill it out and stick it in the desk drawer for the next 20 years, you might want to put down some type of percentage or something like that. But, of course, if you donate your body, you don't have any funeral expenses. They come and pick up the body and haul it off, and you can have a memorial service at the church building, and that's it. You don't have to worry about it. I desire my funeral service to be from the church building. I've already mentioned, or the funeral home, you make the indication. I've already mentioned that the directors and the ministers that I spoke to said that the one thing they'd like to change most of all is to have more funerals at the church building. They felt like that was better. It speaks more to our faith. But that's a choice that has to be made by you and the family. With the following suggestions of Scripture, you write down a passage of Scripture. If you have a favorite, you want it read, you don't have to have a favorite Scripture. You know, sometimes we ask people, do you have a choice of the songs that you'd like to have used at the wedding? And they go into a panic. I mean, at the funeral, and they go into a panic. Oh, no. Do I have to pick the songs? Oh, well, no, you don't have to. I just thought you might have a favorite. Oh, no, I don't. No, just go ahead. Do what you want to. So you go on home. About 4 hours later, you get a phone call. Hey, could we have this song? Oh, they thought of it. You know, once the pressure was off and they kind of relaxed a little bit, just suddenly hit them. Well, they were always humming or singing or whistling this tune or this song. Or this was their favorite song in church. They'd sit there and mumble all the other songs. But when this song came up, man, they sat up straight and sing as loud as anybody. I want this song at the funeral. Fine. Great. Maybe you could have put it down ahead of time, save them that just little bit of that little moment of agony there. Persons to notify upon my death. Maybe for some strange reason, something in your past, you want somebody to know about your death. Maybe you've got a distant cousin or an old friend you haven't seen in a long time and you'd just like them to know. Maybe there's some legal things involved, financial things involved, that some banker across town or in another state needs to know that you're no longer here. All right, if you like, you put down suggestions for pallbearers, obituary notes, things you want to include in your obituary, and information of other things. Now, I have a little bibliography here if anybody's interested in reading on this subject. I've not used all of these books. I haven't read them all, not even familiar with all of them, but you might want to take one if you're interested in it, do a little extra reading. You're welcome to them. I'll leave them up here with the order forms for the tapes. Now, I'd like to share something with you very quickly, which I picked up from a local bank, or a local in Richmond, Virginia. And I went in and talked to this lady. I told her I was coming down here to make this talk, and she said, after we'd been talking for, I guess, about an hour, she says, where's this speech going to be made? I said, Abilene, Texas. She says, well, this stuff comes from Athens, Texas. Where's Athens, Texas? Anybody know? Okay, well, fine. All right, what this guy has done is he's worked out what he calls SOS, Special Organizational Services, and it's to help people get ready. And he's franchised this, and then he sells the franchises to a bank. And the bank then uses it as a free customer service public relations thing. In other words, they don't come and ask you for your business, but they figure by doing this nice service for you, maybe you'll give them their business. And that's fine. I like to be treated that way. So let me just, because we got to go and get to the other lecture real quick. Here's a record of household items. Okay? You know, we talked about making an inventory. Master bedroom. List the things you got in your master bedroom. A bathroom, den, study, playroom, garage, and basement. You go through a list of things you've got down there, all your tools that you know, maybe some fellas have got a couple of $1,000 worth of tools in the garage. And what's going to happen to those things when you're gone? Sweet lady next door to me is leaving her sitting in the garage. They've been there for 10 years. Now, once in a while, one of her sons will come over and use one of them. But I don't know. You know, what's going to happen to yours? She's only got one son. I need to correct that. Record of personal information. Okay, life insurance policies, income tax forms, executors' wills, some of the same stuff we've got on this getting your house in order form. Right. Most banks do. Not all as full as this, but most banks will have some type of budget information or things like that. Here's a checklist of when your marital status changes. You need to change your beneficiaries. You need to have a new will drawn or revised by your attorney. You need to check the beneficiaries on your pension and retirement plans, and so on and so on. It's a list of about 21 checks. Here's basic budget percentages with a month broken down. And here's a place to work on your budget and revise your budget. You can get this kind of stuff at your bank. Records and money management questionnaire. Have you and your spouse an up-to-date will? Do they know where they are? Do you have access to them? Are you the executor or co-executor of your spouse's will? Would there be any estate or inheritance tax? Things of this nature. Many people, particularly more wealthy people, have insurance to pay their taxes. You know, a lot of businessmen have got $1 million worth of insurance paid by their company. And the purpose of that $1 million is to pay off their debts, buy them out of the company, and get things, you know, set up. Because in a small business, a lot of times when the owner or partner or co-owner dies, the business goes down the tube because they were working in such a close way together. All right, if you would like to look through some of this, I'd appreciate you not taking it, but if you'd like to look through some of this SOS material, I'll leave it up here for a few minutes. Let's have a brief prayer and then we'll be dismissed. Father, we thank you for life and we thank you for death because it is the doorway to be with you. We pray that you'll be with us as we seek to help others go through the time of loss and tragedy that we experience in death. Bless us in this lectureship and in our way homes, way back to our homes and our travels. Bless everyone who's been here. In Jesus' name, amen.